You're listening to the Fun Never Ends podcast with Metalhead Nelson and Brutal Brett. Find us at funneverendspodcast.com. Pick Guy Guitar Picks, your source for custom guitar picks, custom laminates, and custom drumsticks. Go to pickguy.com.
Hey, welcome to the Fun Never Ends podcast. I am your Metalhead Nelson, and with me is Brutal Brett. Brutal Brett, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty well, but I'd like to welcome our special guest today. I'll let you take it away.
All right. If you're looking for gear, go on YouTube. You look up a lot of musicians, and everybody's doing reviews. This guy, I've been watching his reviews for like a long time, and I love his stuff. He's very intriguing. Perfecto De Castro, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
Hey, guys, thanks for having me. We finally made it happen.
Finally.
Yeah.
You went to NAMM this year. How was your NAMM experience?
Pretty good. It was hectic. I didn't think 4 days was not enough to see everybody. I think this is the first time that happened because I missed meeting a bunch of people. So, but it was busy. Yeah, it was good busy.
I know how that goes. So many halls to go through, and I heard they shut down the basement hall.
Yeah, because everybody fit in the main. In the main hall.
Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. It's not as big as pre-pandemic now.
Oh, yeah. Last 2021 was...
Yeah, it's still 2020 was huge. And I think that NAMM and the 2019 one were the first NAMMs to where I needed to start wearing earplugs because it was just so bad. It was loud.
Yeah, until the sound police comes down and tells everybody to turn it
down. It didn't matter.
It didn't matter anyway. They're not gonna shut
it. It didn't matter. There was I think 2019 or 2020, I was walking across the other halls, and then I noticed something like was weird or wrong. It's like, oh, I wonder what's different. And I was by the sheet music. I was by the sheet music section. And it's,
quiet. Where Hal Leonard and Albert, all yeah. that is right in the
it,
front
it,
of.
It was quiet, head. So it was like, oh, weird. But you know,
quiet in the sheet music. Who would have thought that?
That's only like well, that's really you walk in.
You know, that's how you get guitar players to shut up, right? Put sheet music in front of them.
You mean nothing is in tabs? What are these? These are numbers.
Unless you're like Bay or like Radio.
Then you're just a savant. I consider that being a savant at that point.
Yeah.
You're not reading the music. You are the music at that point. You just touch the exactly. guitar and it plays for you. That leads me to my question.
Just spied up.
Being at NAMM, what were some new presets or effects or just some new technology that you saw that you really want to try to incorporate into your recordings, into your gear, or even into the way that you teach going forward with some of these new things that exist that we haven't been able to use before or that are just becoming more adopted in producing, composing, or even teaching?
To be quite honest, I didn't really see anything new to me.
Fair.
At NAMM, a lot of them like because I do gear reviews and stuff, and I see a lot of this stuff before they're out, so I wasn't really surprised with with anything. Although I will say that nowadays it's so easy to record stuff and to get like good sound, decent sound right away, you know. Whereas like let's say. Even like 20 years ago, 2004, there's no digital modeling. It's hard to get audio into your computer. I mean, we were still in dial-up internet then, the most of us, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But nowadays, you can pretty much do everything on your phone. Mm-hmm. You can record a video on your phone. You can get one of those Chinese-made multi-effects that you can plug into your phone, and then it records great audio right away. With your camera and stuff. And now they're coming out with those little boxes that you can plug a mic in so you can actually live stream and play at the same time, you know? So that's where we're at right now. And unfortunately it's also easy to get to take tone for granted.
I think I've seen those before. Those are huge.
Yeah, I've been like a lot of the stuff that I review on my channel is about, you know, how to get guitar content out there quickly. quickly and easily. So there's I have a bunch of those your gear recommendations for that.
How did you get into the gear recommendations? How did you start and when did you start?
Oh, I started YouTube when YouTube was young, when it wasn't owned by Google. So 2006 thereabouts. And for the longest time, it was nothing more for me than just a place to stash my videos. Like I said, back then it was difficult to send large files, much less video files, right? So you can upload your video to YouTube and, you know, just send a link and people from across the world can see it and all that. And I didn't really get into the gear. And then once in a while, I would put up like a pedal board video, an amp video, a teaching video, whatever. But it wasn't really, it was more for me, you know. I was teaching a bunch of students at the time, and it was more for me not to repeat myself. So it's like, oh, here, go to my channel, watch this video, then come back next week and make sure you learn it, you know, so something to that effect. And then I think around 2015, 2016, I started noticing the gear demo aspect of it. You know, RJ Ronquillo, Rob Scallon, those, you know, Rob Chapman, Rabea Massad, those guys. So I started getting into it more, and then I decided around 2017 to really, you know, push the channel and be more consistent and really force myself to improve my videos, to improve my storytelling and you know, just to get into the YouTube game. So that was 2017. People found my videos and started watching, and then companies took notice, and then I really got into the game, or until really got into that whole scene when I started collaborating with the other content creators, you know, the Heading Poly, you know, Andy the Guitar Geek and all those guys. Yeah, and prior to that, we were all each in our own little bubble, you know. And then once I got to meet them, we got to share notes, so to speak. And and then we started stealing off each other as far as approach and, you know, content goes, and content approach goes, not steal content. So it's all like it's all like helping each other. Yeah, so that I became part of that community, and we, you know, help each other out.
Not only that, and you have your own music, which you can be found on Spotify and all streaming services. You have a Warehouse Live Set 1 EP and a Set 2 that just came out.
Oh, yeah. Well, prior to moving to the US, I was based in the Philippines, that's where I started my career in the 90s. I was actually part of one of the biggest bands in the Philippines at the time. And then I went on to do other stuff, you know, producing records, dabbling into different genres and all that. So the music part, there are some of the songs that I recorded are in every single Magic Mike karaoke Filipino catalog in the world. So the Warehouse Live EP things, those were recorded the last time I went home to the Philippines. Usually when I go there, I put together a couple of shows. I have a band that plays with me, and then one of my friends has this awesome warehouse with like really high end cameras, and he invited us film there. So it was, and they had the entire setup, you know, three camera setup, all Sony cameras. We had and then they had a full multi track recording rig as well. So we just did our live set in the warehouse, filmed with those cameras, and that's what it is. Initially it was just that project was just to be video for the YouTube channel. And then I got requests from people to put it on Spotify, so it's out on Spotify and music streaming services as well. So that's that.
And I want to actually ask about your time in River Maya, and to further say, how has the Filipino culture and being Filipino influenced your creative process in how you approach music and even your guitar playing? If it affects the way that you approach certain styles, if it approaches the way that you had started playing as well?
Okay, well, I guess it's no secret that a lot of people think that Filipinos are naturally musically gifted. Because, I mean, there's tons of TikToks going around of Filipinos singing karaoke. you know, have you seen that clip of that that couple singing Heart in a Bar? So that I was not naturally gifted. So I really had to work for it. So when I was like 13, I decided I wanted to play guitar, and then I realized that and then I got into a band and all that. But for the life of me, I could not pick it up if I had, like, let's say my cousin show me chords and all that, like, I couldn't understand it. So I really had to take lessons. I took lessons at a local Yamaha music school and all that. But then once I started understanding how everything worked, then I just devoured every resource that was available to me. You know, we had old Guitar Player, Guitar World magazines. You know, it gets to the Philippines as unsold magazines, so they're all like at least 6 months old. So, but I would get those at the book sale and just learn and stuff. As far as your question goes, as with being Filipino and how that affects my approach to music, I improvise a lot. Pretty much, I like improvising. I like doing my own take on things. For the most part, I mean, in the Philippines, if you're in a cover band, they never rehearse. You know, it's like you listen to the song enough times and you can sort of figure out how it goes and okay, let's do it. You know, it's not we don't play the exact parts, but we play enough of it to make it sound like it's our own version. You know, so which is interesting to me. And that was actually an eye opener when I moved here, because here you got to play the exact parts. You know, you got to make sure that the tone is right. You got to make sure that you're playing the exact, you know, well, very close to the exact notes and all that. I had to adjust my approach from there to go from not being so free to somewhat of a structure. And then find a sort of a happy middle ground there, you know, which is also interesting. I still don't play like when I do cover things, I still don't play things note for note, like AC/DC and stuff. But then people yeah. come up to me and say, oh, I can't believe you nailed that AC/DC solo. You know, but all I'm doing is I'm not playing the notes. I'm playing the intention. You know, I'm sort of. The way I do it is during that moment I am Angus Young. You know, so I may not play the exact same licks, but oh, yeah. You know, all the things that makes Angus Angus I put into that.
I would say Slash is another great example where people say, oh, he's such a great guitarist, but when you break down the riff, it's just his styling. And I'm wondering if style and tone make for a much better playing approach than sometimes being musically inclined and having that theory behind it.
Well, that's tricky, because like I said, I wasn't a natural, so I actually relied on theory to understand a lot of the stuff that I wanted to learn, you know. But my approach was always not to learn theory before I could play, but actually use theory to explain the stuff that I'm already playing. That way I understand it, I internalize it, and I can also share it easily, you know, because it's one thing, let's say, if I'm teaching you a lick, right? And let's say you know the pentatonic scale, yeah. Right? Okay, so I can show you, I can tell you, okay, play the pentatonic scale on the first and second strings in this position, right? That makes so much sense, more sense than, oh, just play this and close your eyes and play what you feel, man. That doesn't really help you, you know? So, yeah, anyway, so style is important. Tone is a product of style, and the theory behind it is a way to easily communicate it with other people, basically. Yeah, so I mean, a lot of these players, they're not going to be able to tell you, they won't be able to tell you what exactly they played, you know. They'll have a rough idea of what they're playing, and also they don't exactly play the same thing every time. You know, it changes a little bit. So, yeah, I mean, it's for me, like playing things in exactly like the record is overrated. Yeah.
Speaking of players, I want to talk about your influences. Who are your top five major influences that inspired you to play guitar?
Oh, dude, it's...
I know there's more than five, but if you had to narrow it down.
Okay. Steve Vai would be... Steve Vai, Paul Gilbert, Eric Clapton, Eddie Van Halen, and... what the heck? Richie Kotzen. There you go. Those guys. As far as electric goes, anyway. So, because the thing is, like, when I started figuring out how things work, I devoured everything, you know. So, if I find an article, let's say a Steve Vai interview, right, and then he mentions Steve Ray Vaughan offhand and a couple of other players, so I start hunting Steve Ray Vaughan, right, yeah. And then I get into him for a long time. So that's another guy, Steve Ray Vaughan. And then Steve Ray Vaughan mentions, he's great. He mentions Jeff Beck and Albert King, and you know, so I start hunting those guys down. Yeah, so it's the old adage, you know, don't listen to your heroes, listen to what your heroes listen to, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So it's a combination of that, and it's also interesting how, like, these past couple of years I've been revisiting my influences, you know, and there's a couple of names that I've already forgotten whose licks actually crept into my playing, you know, like recently Yngwie Malmsteen made the rounds, right, from the Rick Beato interview. And I was watching him, and then he was playing this lick. And it's like, that lick's familiar. I play that lick, but I never was into Malmsteen. I wrote him off. Like when I first saw concert footage of him playing, it's like, oh, I'll never be able to play that, you know? So that was when I was 15. But then fast forward to now, he plays this lick, and it's, I played that lick, you know? So I don't know if it was subconscious, if I listened to a Malmsteen record and it just crept in, or if I learned it from somebody else who learned it from Malmsteen, you know? There's all sorts of stuff. Yeah, I mean, Eddie Van Halen died, I didn't realize I had so many Eddie Van Halen licks, you know? Because prior to that, he was the guy on the pedestal. He was the one to aspire to. I never really wanted to be Eddie Van Halen, but I wanted to be where he was. And instead
set
of
the bar
instead
already
of
that.
Yeah. So that was the bar that I had to reach. But I never set out to study his style. But then it was like, oh, I do a lot of Eddie Van Halen stuff. I don't know where that came from, you know. So
and you incorporate it to your playing.
Mm-hmm? Yeah, but I listen to a lot of people, a lot of players. One thing I used to do was let me step back a little bit. One of my goals was to be versatile. So even though I listened to mostly shred guys, I actually listened to everybody, you know. At some point I was into Lee Ritenour and Steve Lukather and all the session guys, Dan Huff and those guys, you know. To the point where one of my practice sessions was actually to tune to a pop radio in the Philippines and play along. Like the song didn't have a guitar part, well what guitar part could I put over it? You know, it's not just shredding over everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's a good practice regimen to get into. Yeah, but I listen to everybody.
I do have a question. It's actually my former guitar player or guitar teacher. Do you know him, Bass Freddy Rapillo? He used to play guitar for Spyro Gyra and Rick James.
Oh, I know the band, but I don't know the guy.
Just because a lot of your approaches were incredibly similar to his. So he was a local LA based guy, but from Buffalo, New York. He sadly passed away from cancer a few years ago, but no, just everything that you're saying is completely what he was trying to get through to my stubborn wanting to be a shredder and just playing heavy riffs. But to lighten things up, as to him passing, I'll ask, what do you think of more progressive guitar players like Tosin Yabasi of Animals as leaders, or even bands like Lithia for taking more of the theory approach, applying it to more, I guess, gent progressive metal in a sense, but also having it lean more pop and mainstream? What do you consider that type of guitar playing and how it inspires younger musicians as an educator yourself?
Okay, I've gotten into trouble sharing my opinions on these guys.
But, oh, really? And,
yeah. Anyway, okay, I'm old school. I grew up in the 80s. I like melody. You know.
Yeah.
Oh God, this is going to get so much hate.
I really like
Polyphia, the technical aspect of it, the way. I mean, it's great. They're really really good guitar players, right?
Yes.
And actually, the whole band, the entire band, even and they have way more and more. They have way better technique and better and clean technique than I will ever, you know, I will ever get.
Right? Interesting.
But their songs sound to me like backing tracks.
Yes. Thank you.
They sound like backing tracks. It's like throw every technique in the guitar with the chords and the little runs and all that, and repeat it until 2 minutes and 30 seconds are up.
You're not wrong. That I yeah. don't know why anyone would hate that.
Yeah. So I mean, it's because I'm not saying that Polyphia is bad or that Polyphia doesn't make good music, but to me it sounds more like it's a music bed. It's missing
yes.
It's missing a top line. It's missing missing the line that grabs the listener and makes the listener identify with the music and hum it in his head and, you know, and dream about it and think about all stuff. You know, that, I think that's what's missing. So but they're great players. I mean, I can't play half their catalog. You know, same with Animals as leaders. I'd listen to them one pass and then I really don't want to listen to it again.
Yep.
You know, but it's great. I mean, it's a great technical feat. And if you're to those of you who like this kind of music and groove to it every day, then, you know, don't let my opinion ruin your day. It's just because that's just me, and you like what you like, you know.
Speaking of, but this is I let you finish. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you.
No,
off.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, sorry. Yeah. No, actually, that's it.
Since we're on the subject of listening, what are like five of your favorite albums? If you had to choose 5 or 10 of your all-time favorite albums, what are your go-tos?
Making it difficult, dude. It's
you should have just said 5 of his best favorite licks to play.
Well, no, it's
okay, we'll go that round.
Okay, let's do 5 albums first. All right. Let's see. Passion and Warfare, Steve Vai.
All right.
Southern Harmony and Musical Companion. Do you know that? The Black Crows. That's a very that's their second record. Southern Harmony and Musical Companion. That is the anti-guitar technique. It's like good old Southern rock. With great songs. Let's see. The Bach Cello Suites by Katsuhito Yamashita. He's a Japanese classical guitarist who plays and this is his Bach Cello Suites record, which I saw him perform in person in San Francisco. At a church at the most unfortunate day. The Blue Angels were having an exhibition by the San Francisco Bridge.
Oh, no.
So while playing classical guitar, like jets would be flying over the church once in a while, drowning everything out. But he did not get out of his space. It's like he was playing and he was like just in his zone and there was nothing else happening but him playing. It was actually amazing to watch. That was 3, right?
Yeah, that's 3, man.
Damn it. Let's see, who else?
We can always come back to this later.
Yeah, you can come back.
Digging deep into it, man.
Yeah, I'll just blurt it out if I remember something suddenly. Texas Flood. There you go. Stevie Ray Vaughan. Texas Flood.
Great album.
Yep. And okay, one more. It'll come later.
Okay. If you could play with any major band, who would be the major band that you would want to play for?
Oof. Current or all time?
Past, present, future. If you had to choose one from back in the day, one that's still going on, and one that's going on now, man.
You're killing him with this.
Here's the thing. Since I'm a fan of the bands that I like growing up, you know, I never really saw myself playing with them because I like them as that unit. You know, it's nothing like but now that now that I can view it as work, then that would be a possibility. However, I think instead of naming a band that I would like to be in, I'll just give you my ideal lineup. You know, who I would want to be in a band with. You know, okay.
Oh yeah.
So drummer would be Dean Castronovo. Dean Castronovo or...
Oh, yeah. I met Dean before when he played.
And then singer would be David Coverdale, of course. Bass player would be... I don't know if you remember this, if you've heard of him. His name is Randy Coven. He was big in the Shred.
Randy Coven.
Yeah, yeah. He's known for having Randy the bass with cool. Bass with the whammy bar. he wrote articles for Guitar World, I think. So Randy Coven would play bass. That would be the four piece. So me, Randy Coven, Dean Castronovo, and David Coverdale. That would be my band. Maybe a second guitar player, but I don't know who would that be. Yeah. Yeah, so that...
Awesome.
Coven
was reported to Vi and Meltz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was there. I would have said I wanted to be in Whitesnake, but then that would also mean I would be replacing Steve Vai, and I don't want to do that. You know, so
even though Steve Vai steps in every now and then, because it's right now it's Joe Hoekstra and Red Beach.
Yeah. But the Whitesnake I really liked was the one with Steve Vai and Adrian Vandenberg in it. You know, but then the guys who came after him, Doug Aldrich, Joel Hoekstra and Red Beach, they're no slouches either, you know. So yeah, it would have to be like a the stars would really align for me to get into that circle.
I have a question about your teaching, actually. Okay. It's wondering if do your students bring you songs ever and be like, hey, I want to try to learn this, and if so, what are the types of songs that they bring in, and how do you incorporate music theory to teach them? Like, hey, this is what they're doing, but this is what they're actually doing, which they may not be aware of, as in the band musician that they bring in, whether it's a jazz lesson in the end or teaching different scales or chords.
Back when I used to teach regularly in-person classes, and I'd have like all sorts of students, we always tackle songs, right? So I make them give me a list of like 10 songs that they want to learn, right? And then from there, I can see which one I would choose as their first three chord song, you know, first bar chord song or power chord song or riff song. And then the soloings, and then eventually soloing song, because it depends. Because if they're like really rank beginner, like nothing, like can't move the fingers yet, I would probably start with a riff song. Usually, I if they don't have a preference, then I would teach like Cream, Sunshine of Your Love, just the root notes, because that will get the fingers moving, and it's repetitive enough. So that it's just practice. Yeah. And also one of my requirements when I teach is we always finish the song. So the goal of starting a song is to be able to play it to a backing track after maybe like three or four lessons or sooner if they really work on it.
Yeah.
Right. So all these. And from there, it's all the theory stuff is all it's like it's like hiding vitamins in your cereal, you know. So here's the song, and this is the theory component in it. Like for that song, "Sunshine for Your Love," but I'm actually training them to move their fingers independently instead of just like just doing this, right? And then maybe a three chord song would be something like "Sweet Child of Mine," you know, DCG. You know, that way they can sort of work on changing open chords and with the strumming, or strumming would be like a Green Day song as well. I mean, I know I used to use "Time of Your Life" to teach syncopation, you know, because that way it's not all like downstrokes. So you put accents on the down and the up as well, and all that.
Yeah, it's all
so, down. Yeah, yeah, and also I keep in mind that not everybody wants to go deep into the theory rabbit hole. I mean, some students are fine with just, you know, learning the songs and looking forward to the next song and playing that to the backing track and showing it off to their buddies, right? There were a couple who, and eventually I wait for them to ask me, like, how does this work? Because then when they're the ones who want to know more, then I can start discussing all the nitty gritty of the way things work, right? Yeah. So that's pretty much my approach. Though nowadays, since I don't have a lot of time to devote to teaching, I pretty much take on students that are more advanced, more further along in their playing, and people who I think I can help, you know, because sometimes they send me a video of their playing just so that I can see, you know. I say, well, you don't need me. What do you need me for? You know, so yeah. So I mean, it's I don't take every teaching gig that comes my way. I mean, if I'm sure that I'm able to help, then I do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Going back to gear, what you can name 5 of your favorite pieces of gear that you've ever had. I'm sorry, that's how I
hear it. It's all 5. Okay.
I'm a gear nerd. I can go to like.
Okay. Okay.
We'll go 10. You can more.
That's all right. So 5 pieces of gear. Number 1 would be a Soldano tube amp, the SLO-100. That is my ultimate amp.
Yeah.
Number 2 would be this. Do you know what this is?
That's a Steve Vai gem, but not just any gem. That's the new one of the newer models.
It's not a new model. This is a 1990 floral gem. This is the Holy Grail. Ooh. This was introduced back in the David Lee Roth time. So this is my dream guitar, and I finally managed to score one.
It's pristine too.
Yeah, exactly. I'm so happy. It wasn't cheap, but but it's worth it. I have a couple of videos on this on my channel.
I think that's the same one that you used in Going Crazy.
Going Crazy and Just Like Paradise.
Smile, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. Just Like Paradise, actually. The Just Like Paradise video.
Oh, yeah.
He used that. Okay, what else? I don't have it, but it's a Eventide H90.
Oh yeah,
it's their new dual harmonizer multi effects processor. That's really really cool. 3. Oh, have you heard of Shabbat guitars?
No, but that sounds hilarious.
Say that one more time.
Shabbat, S H A B A T. They're based here in Los Angeles. And they make the best modern guitars nowadays. Hold on.
Oh.
Oh man.
That thing is a beaut.
Yeah, so they're based out of somewhere in the valley. So this is a Shabbat guitar, and hands down these are the best, you know, modern made guitars right now. Again, they're not cheap, but they're worth it.
Wow. Telly with the
with a weird headstock. This is something I had them custom ordered from them. So it's a Telly. looks beat up. Two Lawler humbuckers and original Floyd Rose. This is their top one. And then this is sort of their signature, because this is based off of the 1949 Telecaster, the original Telecaster headstock, which a lot of people find. This is a polarizing look. So a lot of people, some people like it, some people don't. I really like it.
I love that. That thing is gorgeous.
Yeah. So this is. Have you guys heard of a plek machine? Do you know what a plek machine is?
Plek machine, no.
Okay, so basically, when
can't say I do.
It's like an automated robot that fixes frets in the simplest terms. So it's a little booth. You hang your guitar in there, and then it's like a CNC machine with grinders, you know. So its sole job is to level and set up the frets as perfectly as possible, right? So this guy Avi Shabbat took one of his guitars to the plek booth at NAMM and had the machine measure it, and he sent me the video. The graph of where the machine wants the frets to be adjusted, and the graph of his adjustment is like the exact same line. Maybe a little off by this area. So he does, his accuracy rivals that of a numerically controlled machine, you know, and he does it by hand. Mm-hmm. So that's why I love these guitars. And you'll see a bunch of these on YouTube too. I know Henning has a couple. Michael Nielsen, have you guys seen him? He does like amp gear demos as well. Their latest artist is Justin Derrico of The Voice. Mm-hmm. And then I played at their NAMM booth. And then the guy who played after me was Dweezil Zappa. So Dweezil uses Shabbat guitars too. You know, and the thing I like about them the most is they're not too precious about, you know, building their guitars, because these are I'll say that these are the best guitars, some of the best guitars being built right now. They don't take themselves too seriously as far as, you know, as aesthetics go, because these are tools. Yeah. Like let me show you this next one. Hold on. A lot of people are gonna have a field day with this, because this looks like a Strat, right?
it's a Shabbat Strat.
You know, so it's like, yeah, so it's I love this guitar so much. And there's a practical reason for this too, because you know how Strats play differently from Les Pauls. Like Les Pauls are easier to bend. There's two main factors. The Gibson scale is shorter, so yeah, your strings are more slack, right? And then the other reason is the headstock, because like Gibsons have three aside headstocks, and you can see the string length from the nut to the tuner is short on these things, whereas on a Strat it's going to be like all the way here, right? So you have more tension, even on a Kramer, like on these things, right? So there's more tension behind the nut. There's more string tension behind the nut on a 6-inline headstock than a 3-inline. So this makes it really easy to bend the first strings and be in tune and all that. Yeah, but it's quirky enough that I just love the look. It's just, you know, it's their signature. So
yeah, that gold pick guard and that cream white kind of body, huh?
Along with the look, I'm like,
oh, what was that again? I missed it.
Oh, the name of
that gold pick guard with that cream kind of body.
Yeah. Okay, so that's three, Shabbat, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, three and
was that?
That was three. Let's see, what else?
So you had the Steve Vai gem,
the Shabbat, and the Soldano. Soldano. Oh, here.
Two.
Okay, and this is fun.
Oh wow! This is a nice looking.
A color changing strap.
So this is This is from Rocket Music Gear. My friends from Rocket Music Gear. I mean, gear doesn't have to be like stuff you plug in. It's you know, you need to accessorize too. So people will see this from a mile away. In fact, and the other thing I wanted to show you guys is this strap lock. Okay? This is called the Rock Lock, and this is a universal strap lock. So you know how old strap locks
all in advertising.
Okay, good. So typical strap locks, you have to change the button on your guitar so that it makes perfectly. So this will work with any strap button, regardless of the size. So look, like Kramers have the big strap buttons, right? So what this allows you to do is you can keep the strap on you and you can just change guitars.
That's something Dunlop should have done, but...
Yeah. Oh well, you could do that with Schallers and Dunlops, but then all your guitars would need the Dunlop buttons.
Yeah.
You know. Whereas this would work with any guitar. So it makes it easy if you have a wireless pack attached to the strap itself, and you're at a gig and you need to change the guitar. So instead of doing the whole dance of unplugging and doing all that, you just unlock, change guitars, lock it back up, and then plug in.
No, that's easy. My next.
So this is, and also the thing I like about this is even though these are plastic, these won't scratch your guitar finish, and also they are very grabby. You know how like Dunlops and Schallers, after a while they loosen up, and then if you don't keep tightening them back in, then they loosen up, and if you forget, they don't do their job basically. This one, you only need to finger tight it, and it doesn't happen. Yeah, I hope it let go at the on the next side, because that way you can catch it. Okay, so that's that, and let's see. Oh, okay. Finally, you need very nice cables. Don't skimp on cables. Okay, so it's like this is a local company.
Can't go wrong with cables.
Yeah, Tsunami cables. These are handmade in Temecula.
Oh yeah. So I know Tsunami. My buddies used to be endorsed.
Oh, there you go. So yeah. So I mean, you don't have to go good super stuff. Crazy and buy the $1,000 cables, you know, but don't get the $15 Amazon ones either. Just, you know, set your budget into the $50 range and go for something a little over that. And if you buy it from Guitar Center, they have a lifetime warranty. So if it breaks, you just go back and change it.
Oh yeah, being in many high school bands, I would
with a live wire and monster cables to interchange them.
Always the monster cable.
Yep.
That
there you go.
That's my distortion.
Never had that problem.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna go ahead and wrap this up. Anything else you'd like to add, Admiral Brett?
I need to bow down to your musical prowess and your shredding. Well, I would say that in regards to your theory, then, because you are the book in this case, and I want to thank you for shedding some light on all of it as well.
Oh well, it's my pleasure, and it's. People just have to remember that it's not rocket science. it's
guitar science.
Exactly.
Perfecto. It was amazing to have you on the show, and thank you for agreeing to come on and having some laughs and talking about your career, man.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Go ahead and tell everybody where they can find you. Open it in the script.
Okay. Website is perfectodecastro.com, and then on Instagram and TikTok it's at perfdecastro, which is P-E-R-F DeCastro, just cut that short. And then on YouTube it's at official perfectodecastro. Actually, just type me on Google and it'll come up.
Sounds. We'll go ahead and link all your social media, everything in the link in description, so everybody can go ahead and click and come find you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Yeah.
I want to thank you again. And for myself and Brutal Brett, this has been an episode of Fun Neverends Podcast. Fun Neverends Podcast can be found everywhere you find your podcast. Go to funneverendspodcast.com. Share, like, subscribe. Go to Perfecto de Castro's YouTube channel. Like, subscribe, and tell your friends.
Yeah.
For myself, Brutal Brett,
I got the fifth album.
Wait. Castro, this has been an episode of Fun Neverends Podcast. Thank you.
Hold on. I got the fifth album. Schizophonic. Yeah. Schizophonic by Nuno Betancourt.
That sounds cool. familiar.
Yeah, it's like a.
That's why it's a Nuno album.
Yeah, it's an obscure Nuno solo record, but it sounds like extreme.
Right. Well, dude, that'll be on my playlist.
Yeah, it's that's what extreme would sound like if they tried to be Nirvana.
Well, all right, that'll be on my playlist for tomorrow on my drive to work.
Enjoy.
All right, this has been an episode of Never Ends Podcast. Thank you again for Hector Castro, for myself and everybody else. We'll see you next time. Bye. We'll